Are you gay?
Geeky?
Just enjoy hearing your good Judy's dish about the latest in pop culture?
Well, then you're in luck.
The boys of Flame On are here for you.
In every episode, we discuss the topics that entrance us.
Whether it's comics, TV,
movies,
drag queens,
or video games,
we've got you covered.
So, if you're ready for your gay and geeky slice of pop culture life,
then sit back and get ready to
Flame On!
Today's tale begins the night the internet went down at the Smith family.
Son?
The dad watched on powerless as his son aged before his eyes.
The game has been loading forever.
Save yourself from broadband nightmares. Get BT's Unbreakable Hybrid Broadband backed up by EE, the UK's best network. Search BT Hybrid Broadband. 88% UK availability. 4G connection takes up to 175 seconds. Best for mobile network performance. Verify at ee.co.uk/claims.
What's going on, everybody? Patrick Bear here, and we are back again. It is the month of February of the year 2023, and I am joined by my co-hosts, all three of us now in different states. We've got Eric coming to you from the Sunshine State of Florida.
Hello.
And then we've got BJ making his way, his first recording from his new residence back in Georgiana. What's up?
Georgia. What's up?
Oh God! All right, let's not get copyright claimed in the middle of this. Well, we are back. We almost did this without BJ because three of us were in the same room for the first time together for the first time in years. This past weekend, when we're recording on a very gross Wednesday night here in Chicago, but this past weekend, Eric and Brian were in Illinois, and I almost threw my phone on the table and said, let's hit record and do it like the old school days when we'd record at the Parliament House.
y'all should have done a Flame On Live for the first time in like forever, just like a quickie live recording.
Quickies are always a good thing in our book, but you know, I was too busy being bitter that Brian beat me out for the damn 50-50 money, so I said, fuck that. There was a curling tournament here in Chicago, or I won't even say Chicago, because goddamn y'all, you were like, yeah, we're coming to Chicago for curling. That shit was 45 minutes outside of the city. At the Windy City.
It was in Chicagoland.
Bitch, I don't even think that counts. I don't even think that's part of Chicagoland. Chicagoland's 200 some odd square miles. I still don't think that was inside of Chicagoland. But the Drag Effect Bonspiel was this past weekend. And a big shout out to Eric was the guy that coordinated it, correct?
Yes.
I don't know much about him or about the event, but I did go and visit a little bit on Saturday. You all seem to be enjoying yourselves and having a jolly old time at the club. So it was nice to have y'all in my new state.
Mm-hmm. It was a lot of fun.
Is it new at this point? How long have you been there?
Almost 3 years.
Oh my God.
I know, right? What are we? It's almost the end of February, March. Oh God, like a month, just a little over a month. A month and 5 weeks from now, I'll hit my 3 year anniversary here in Chicago. Oh Lord, time flies.
Wow,
time flies when there's a global pandemic.
Lord time heaven. Flies when you're stuck at home doing absolutely nothing. Fuck all.
Exactly. Well. We are here to chit and chat about life and things and maybe some pop culture, things that may or may not be recent. I feel like this is a weird time of the year for pop culture, because you're coming off of, like, a lot of television shows are coming off of their winter hiatus. You've got your mid-season replacement starting. It's not a huge time for film, because obviously the you have your holiday rush, and then you have your, the beginning of the year just isn't really, you know, you're gearing up for a lot of your awards, the Grammys, you know, the Oscars are coming up. So this is kind of a time where it's a little bit quieter, or you're like me and you just either watch things and forget about them, or you just watch YouTube videos all the time. I don't know.
So what's normally, this is the time of the year where nobody wants to release movies because they always get terrible reviews. This year is an outlier, because like this year we had Megan dropped in January, and it was like a big hit and everybody loved that. And then you've got a Marvel movie coming out in February, and I really think March is actually the time they usually release a Marvel movie. So it's picking up. It's quickly morphing into a time where people are like, you know what? We should release a movie. We should release an album or a TV show, because there's a handful of shows that released in January, but like nothing super major, at least for me. But it's definitely changing, because I remember when anything came out in January, you went to the movies to hate watch it. 100%. You went, like, all of those really bad, like, Not Another Teen Movie, superhero movie, like all the movies, all of those, I think, dropped normally around January or February, because it was just the time to release like irreverent comedies. But now it's kind of spread out because COVID disrupted everything.
I was going to say, like, for a second, I was be like, wait, no, there was a movie that I'm pretty sure came out right around Valentine's Day. At this point, more than a few years ago. I was like, that I did not go to hate watch. And then you said irreverent comedy. And I was like, oh, yeah, no, that's Happy Death Day.
So, exactly.
No, that does fit in there. did not go to hate watch it, though.
But I want to say Happy Death Day was part of the turnaround. Because I remember going to see Happy Death Day and Happy Death Day to You and all and those. And being complete, like, Freaky, I think, came out on a February. Like, all the, like, it was, that was the same director. All those came out kind of early in the year when you would expect movies to be terrible. And those movies were really good. They were actually really entertaining and fun. So
I'll posit this, though, to your point. They're not exactly cinema masterpieces.
No.
They're fun movies. And Happy Death Day, definitely a higher echelon than Happy Death Day to You, in my opinion, in my humble opinion. I think that the first definitely was better than the second, but even now with, and at this point when we're recording, Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania has come out. I haven't run to go see it yet. You know, I had gotten back into that feeling of, okay, everything is like, I need to go see these things right away. I don't want to get spoiled. I don't want all of this. I have yet to go see the movie. There was a part of me that was like, oh, well, maybe when, when Eric's in town, I'll be like, let's go see this movie. But I mean, stuff was going on, and it's a time of year where I just don't feel compelled. The January, February slog of it's super dark, super early, less so in Florida, because I forgot about going back to visit last February. I realized, oh shit, you guys still get light until later in the day than we Gross. Do now in Illinois, but Gross. You know, it's thankfully not dark at 3:30 in the afternoon anymore. It's getting lighter later now, but I don't feel like I need to rush to do a lot of things right now. And maybe it's just because it is the season, you know, the holidays, there's the hustle and bustle, so if something comes out, I'm like, oh, okay, there's kind of an energy around it. January and February, like, yeah, you'll get your sleeper hits like Megan. You'll have something fun like Happy Death Day as like a Valentine's Day, quote unquote, you know, type of thing. But I think Marvel might look at this and go, maybe February is not our ideal time to put out a movie. And I mean, the critics' reviews for Quantumania, have not been anything to write home about, and probably something that they would want to steer away from, where the moviegoers, the actual like fan reviews, are much more positive. So I don't know. It's just one of those things. This is just a long conversation to really kind of make it seem like my lack of an in-depth topic is planned. So thank you all for indulging that conversation. Because before we, you know, and this is for the listening audience, before we record, we always have a little conversation in our group chat and say, okay, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? And I literally was just like, normally I sit back and I let everybody pick, and then I yell at BJ for taking my topic.
I waited till like 6 o'clock today expecting somebody to say something. And I was like, what are we doing? Because I'm not going to be told I'm stealing things because nobody's making a decision. So
I was like, what the fuck am I going to talk about today? Because I thought about that. I was like, we have not discussed what we're going to talk about on this episode. And yeah, I was just like, I've watched things. I'm catching up on things. So I'll have a little smorgasbord, most likely, just hitting on a couple of topics.
Did you even watch any of the commercials or trailers that launched during the Super Bowl?
I watched the Guardians trailer.
Okay.
I finally watched the Guardians trailer just because I wanted to see Warlock in action. That was really the only reason
they didn't randomly pull Warlock from the New Mutants.
Oh, could you imagine? Self-friend Doug. No, I don't. I was like, I don't know what else to go with from War. I just know self-friend. I knew Warlock, but you know, I just didn't know where to go with that. Yes, Adam Warlock with something on his forehead that is not the Soul Stone. So I'm very curious to see what the deal is there. But yes, so we are going to talk about some topics here. So why don't we go ahead and jump in? BJ, from your new abode, why don't you tell us what your topic is on this lovely day?
Well, actually, this works out perfectly because my first topic has to do somewhat with Black History Month. At the beginning of February, a little show dropped. I believe, I want to say as of this recording, probably 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago. Disney dropped Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur on not only the Disney Channel. They aired the first episode, but they actually dropped the whole season up on Disney Plus. And for those of you that don't know, Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur is actually a Marvel comic series about an inhuman girl, Lunella, who she's actually canonically, she's the smartest person in the Marvel universe. She's inhuman. She has complete control of her own biology. And she has a pet Tyrannosaurus Rex because she mastered time travel and found a dinosaur and keeps him as a pet.
So Disney, she is smarter than Riri then?
She is smarter than Riri. And I think it was the Miss America comic, the American Chavez comic, she actually has like a pan-dimensional like HBCU. And one of her classes is like the responsible use of time travel. And what is it? Riri is in like she runs the school. Riri is like I think she's getting her PhD in like mechanical engineering, and Prodigy's there. America's there because she's doing like pan-dimensional studies, but the dean of the entire school is Lunella. So it's the animation is absolutely out of this world. I love the animation style. It's beyond cute. It's super vibrant and colorful. And they even launched a character meet and greet in Disneyland. I think it was this past weekend. So like a week after the show launched, they have Lunella running around, doing a meet and greets and everything. And yeah, it's I never read the comic. I only encountered Lunella in my comic reading like randomly I know she popped up in a couple of Inhuman books. I know she popped up Miss America. I think there was like a comic where she runs into the X-Men and the X-Men are just kind of like, yeah, we're not going to get involved with you. Have fun. Like nobody wants to really bother her. I would love to see a comic with her and all of the other kid geniuses. Who's Reed Richards? What is his daughter's name? His daughter who's also like one of the...
Valeria.
Valeria. I would love to see her and Valeria interact more. I would love to see her interact with all of the...
The Illuminati?
No, not the Illuminati. It's the boy genius. He's like they've canonically grown him up now. He's like 17. He was a friend of the Hulk's. He became a Hulk. Amadeus. Yeah. I would love to see her interact with Amadeus. But the show overall, it's somewhat self-contained, but it does exist within the Marvel universe, because at one point her family's skating rink's about to get shut down and she's like, we need to call the Avengers or something. And somebody's like, do they even come below Fifth Street? So it's really cute. And the use of music is like beautiful. Cause there's been a clip going around where she's fighting, this one, gravity based villain, and her mom gave her a cassette tape player. Cause her mom's a DJ, and half the episode, she's like, I don't know what this thing is. And then finally she realizes it's a cassette tape player. So whenever she goes into battle, she actually plays like a track. And episode one, it's the opening to the show, which is a fucking bop. I believe, I may have already posted it up on the Facebook page, but I'm going to post it again because I can't stop listening to it. I have a problem.
Ma'am, hold on. I need to back up for a second. Her mom is a DJ and she gave her a cassette deck.
Mm-hmm. Baby boy,
what
not
kind
everybody
of DJ
got,
was she?
Not everybody got money. She's a DJ that gets whatever she can do. But she has a whole turntable set. She has a whole turntable set, but she gave her daughter her first cassette tape player.
She probably still makes mixtapes.
She does for her daughter. She makes mixtapes. And the thing is, her daughter plays, so Lunella plays them before she goes in the battle, and one of the songs was a Childish Gambino track, which, first of all, I'm like, what's this child doing listening to Childish Gambino? She's 13 years old. She don't need to be listening to this. And second of all, everybody kind of lost their shit on Twitter because they were like, Disney let this happen? I mean, it's censored, but at the same time, it's comparing the full track to this track. I don't know who they got to do the music editing for it, but it's pretty seamless. So I'll post that on the Facebook page as well. But the voice cast is absolutely ridiculous. You've got Diamond White, who is the voice of Lunella. She was mostly in soap operas. She was on American Dad. She's mostly been in nothing but soap operas, and like she was had some like non-recurring roles in a whole bunch of stuff like Girl Meets World, Phineas and Ferb. So she's definitely within the Disney wheelhouse. And I think, and she sings the opening song, so they definitely knocked it out of the park. And then her mom is Alfre Woodward. And I'm like,
what?
Yeah. I'm like, I literally just looked this up. So I was completely floored about that. Gary Anthony Williams plays her grandfather. Lawrence Fishburne plays like the backstory man is what he's called. Craig Robinson plays the principal of the school. It's crazy. And then you've got Fred Tat. I'm gonna butcher this name. I always butcher the Italian names. Fred Tatasciore, who has been in every animated thing for the past decade. I mean, Scooby-Doo movies, Batman animated movies. He did a couple of Sonic series. He was in Injustice as Captain Atom. he played, what was one that I saw that I, he was in over, he's in Overwatch as Soldier 76. He plays Devil Dinosaur. This man is making grown dinosaur noises, but he played Alfred in the Teen Titans Go movie. Absurd. The amount of the Cuphead show as Santa Claus, like he's in Lower Decks as Shax. Like, it's absurd the people they got to do this show.
You are sleeping on some of the big names. Allison Brie is in there. Colby Smulders is Maria Hill in this show.
I don't even think I where.
I'm looking up the cast of Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur. Got Diamond White, Libby Bearer, Lawrence Fishburne, Maya Hawke, Nepo Baby, Alfre Woodard, Allison Brie, J. Hud, Jennifer Hudson's in the show.
Oh, you're looking. I see. I'm just on top cast. I didn't go through the entirety. Oh yeah, my god!
I look at the bottom cast. Okay, stop having bottom erasure. Method Man is in this show.
I knew Method Man was in the show. Yeah,
David Diggs, India Moore.
Yeah,
like
it's insane. Yeah. It is absolutely insane, the cast power they have for the show. And I felt like they advertised it okay, but they definitely, I feel like they should have advertised it a little bit better because the show is stacked and it's fantastic. I think it got renewed for either one or two more seasons, and everybody's hoping they have like Miles pop up. And a couple of other Marvel characters pop up, but the whole show, it's super cute and really, really relatable. Yeah, absolutely gorgeous animations. I can't tell you how much I love the animation style. But seriously, if any of you have not seen this show, I will post I will post my favorite musical moments from the show. And I will definitely post the opening, as well as probably the Spotify link, because the moment I found out there was a Spotify link for the full track for the opening, I may have put that sucker on a repeat throughout my entire move. So definitely Devil Dinosaur, Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur. Please, please, please go watch it either on Disney Plus or the Disney Channel. Any which way you want to watch it, please. It's so good.
I'm probably the wrong person to speak on how well it was advertised, but to be completely honest, I had no clue about the show until you put it in the chat today. I had no idea that this thing was in existence.
I mean, again,
may not be the right person to talk about how well it was advertised, but I usually see shit about like new shows, especially Marvel shows. Like my feed is my social feeds are usually Marvel, now wrestling, because somehow I've after like 20 years of not watching wrestling, I've started watching wrestling YouTube channels, and that has led into a shit ton of wrestling stuff in my feeds, and depending on which platform it is, naked hairy men. So, oh, and some drag sprinkled in for good measure. But yeah, I didn't know. The logo is adorable. What I've seen so far and what you've talked about sounds entertaining. I've never read the comics either, but I remember seeing them. I remember kind of like the buzz that was around them when they came out with her being an Inhuman. Do they mention if she's Inhuman?
No, I haven't seen any touch on the Inhuman stuff, because right now, so Marvel has this nasty habit of like when the Inhuman, when the movies only had the rights, or the MCU only had the rights for the Inhumans, you notice they scaled back the X-Men comics, and the X-Men just had a terrible life in general. And they pushed so more
the last
Inhumans.
60 years.
Yeah, so they pushed the Inhumans comics, and then when the show didn't do well and everything didn't really take off with them, they scaled back the Inhumans comics significantly, and like took three Inhuman characters that people liked, which was like Ms. Marvel, Moon Girl, and I know there's like a third one floating around in there. I think Quake was like featured on and off in like Spider-Man, Miles Morales Spider-Man a couple times. She popped up just in the background constantly. And now they're kind of, since they have plans to bring the X-Men back into the MCU, now they're scaling back the Inhuman stuff. So as of right now, she's just a genius girl. 13-year-old genius. So, which is fine.
Yes and no to that, because Death of the Inhumans was a number of years ago, and that was kind of in part to the backlash to the television show.
Yeah.
And kind of the popularity. I don't think they had secured the rights back to the X-Men yet. I don't think the deal with Fox had gone through at that point. But they had started scaling the Inhumans back at that point, because you're right, when it's a very weird teeter-totter, because in 2000, when X-Men came out, Marvel didn't own the rights to them or the films, but they really focused heavily on them. That's when you had the Grant Morrison run, you had new X-Men, like that was a whole big thing, and then he went into Joss Whedon's X-Men run in 2004. Four, if I'm not mistaken. So there was a big focus on that, but that was before the MCU. And then it was like, okay, we can make money making our own properties and putting them out and getting this. So then they scaled back for sure and did have that focus on the Inhumans, but that didn't really go over well with the fans, because the Inhumans are not a good substitute, especially when the climate in the world of where you have a ruling class that denigrates and subjugates the lower undesirables may not be the property that you want to push in this climate.
Yeah.
So to your point, Marvel has this habit of now that Eric has kind of put How I Met Your Mother kind of back into my head for a minute, the overcorrection, where it's like, hey, this didn't work, we're gonna do Death of the Inhumans. And they killed the Inhumans after essentially just creating a ton of new Inhumans, and now Black Bolt and Medusa and all of them are kind of back to being hidden and not as, like, everybody kind of thinks they're gone. So it'll be interesting to see, because they did retcon a lot of stuff, and I know that, I think we talked about it when we talked to Ms. Marvel, the TV show, that Ms. Marvel was originally conceived as a mutant, but she was conceived at a time where the X-Men push was reduced. So they didn't want to have her out there as a mutant. They said, okay, we'll change her to an Inhuman. And now you have this resurgence of the show. You have Ms. Marvel, you have all these plans. Now you've introduced mutation, blah, 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 all of this. But then you have Spider-Man. Or not, I'm sorry, not Spider-Man. Doctor Strange. Multiverse of Madness. Because then you go to this other world, and now you have Blackagar Boltagon being his hot self over on this other world. And it's like, well, what is he? How are we going to do this? Am I going to get my giant bulldog back? These are questions I have for Marvel right now in the MCU, because it all really boils down to, do I get my giant teleporting bulldog back? Because I need to know. Like Mark Anthony, I need to know. Anyway, again, another long tangent that I will not want to listen to in editing. But you all will get, because I'm not taking it out. So... overall, what do you rate Moon Girl and Double Dinosaur so far?
Honestly, I would probably give this out of 5. I'd probably give this a 4.8. It's just so cute, and it's, you know, they've ended a lot of the really good Disney animated Disney shows, Gravity Falls, the new DuckTales, Star vs. the Forces of Evil. Owl House will be having its final episode coming up here in the next couple months. So it's kind of nice for them to put out something else that kind of has a really a really nice vibe, a really good vibe, very pro-black, so very diverse. So I'm very, very excited to see how far this show goes.
And Eric, I'm so, I completely steamrolled over you. If there's anything, did you have anything you wanted to add to the Moon Girl conversation?
No. No, okay. Nothing that you didn't ask, so.
I was like, I just went from a long-winded tangent to having BJ wrap up this piece of it. Very quickly. But, fantastic. So that is Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur airing weekly on,
It's airing weekly on the Disney Channel, but it is all up on Disney Plus.
There we go. I don't know why I was having such trouble at that point. I was like, Disney, because it says Disney Channel on the thing. For some reason, I was having a very bad mental block. But yes, Saturday mornings on Disney Channel, and then Disney Plus has the whole season. So go check it out. I will have to put that on my list of things to watch. All right, dear listeners, we thank you so much for joining us for another installment of Flame On. We hope that you're enjoying this and all of the other content that we put out for you. If you would like to help support our podcast, you can go check out our website at flameonshow.com. From there, you can check out all of our social media. You can check out our video interviews. You can check out our non-active Twitch accounts. And follow us for that day when you will see a little icon pop up that says, one of us is now streaming live, which may be a while, but still, there's a chance. And you can also check out our swag shop, our T-Fury shop, where Brian was actually wearing his Flame On shirt to Barrioke this past Sunday. And I have worn mine out and about. And you can be like Jamie. I swear I'm going to make that shirt just for him. Just that way he can see it in the shop. Nobody would buy it, but I would love to make it just to make that joke a whole, like just come full circle and make it a thing. But you can do all of that at flameonshow.com. And there's also a link to our Patreon. If you would like to help support us financially, and that way you can subscribe at any of the four tiers that we have and, get some additional perks and some bonuses from our show. So that is flameonshow.com and patreon.com/flameonshow.
Today's tale begins the night the internet went down at the Smith family.
Son?
The dad watched on powerless as his son aged before his eyes.
The game has been loading forever.
Save yourself from broadband nightmares. Get BT's Unbreakable Hybrid Broadband backed up by EE, the UK's best network. Search BT Hybrid Broadband. 88% UK availability. 4G connection takes up to 175 seconds. Best for mobile network performance. Verify at ee.co.uk/claims.
This is a message from Acast.
This is the sound of thousands of active shoppers seeing your poster on Clear Channel locations on the local high street. This is the sound of families at the supermarket, reminded of your product as they step inside. And this is the sound of millions of people seeing your ad while commuting by car and bus. These are the sounds of real people seeing your brand in the real world. If you search Clear Channel UK, you can discover why out of home is essential for your advertising campaign.
All right, let's go to our next topic. Eric, what you got for us?
So, in honor of the Oscars coming up in a couple weeks, I decided to watch at least one of the Best Picture nominees, which I am now at 30%, having watched my third out of the 10 nominees. I'd previously watched Top Gun Maverick and Everything Everywhere All at Once. So I saw Tar, which is considered a psychological drama starring Cate Blanchett as a world-renowned female conductor who kind of descends into madness. In some ways, I compare it a little to Black Swan, but it's not quite as psychological. A lot of it is just her own ego getting in the way, and there's kind of a little bit of Me Too happening on her side, where she is a co-founder to a foundation that supports aspiring female conductors. So she takes a number of interns, and she takes a number of female interns. Yeah, she calls herself at one point in the movie a U-Haul lesbian.
Not that I'm bringing those stereotypes back.
But it's interesting. There's a discussion at one point about her feelings on respecting the art versus the artist, which is kind of relevant in this landscape of current times, being that so many people are arguing up and down all about Hogwarts legacy all over the place.
I was going to say, did Joanne write this movie?
She did not.
Did she bankroll it? Is she executive producer?
As far as I know, she is getting a no coin from this movie.
Okay.
Nice.
Yeah, but I love everything that Cate Blanchett does in this movie. I feel that the movie itself is kind of small and quiet in everything that isn't her performance, which it's just a character study in that. Yeah. But it's a lot of fun.
I was gonna say, do you feel like it is worthy of being an Oscar contender?
I feel for sure that her performance is Oscar worthy. The movie itself is really good and well made and interesting, but I just don't necessarily connect with much outside of her performance. It's just so strong, individual performance.
Does it still have it? I was looking at something. Said that it had a 100% Rotten Tomatoes score. Oh no, that's okay. It's dropped. It's a 91%. That's all really high tomato meter score.
Yeah, it's really good all the way around. And it's kind of fun that at the end, after she's completely ruined her reputation and basically blacklisted from all the major symphonies everywhere, she's reduced to conducting an orchestra in the Philippines playing the Monster Hunter soundtrack in front of the game. Kind of like those distant world concerts that go around and play like the Final Fantasy music and everything.
They had a Kingdom Hearts one. They have a Star Trek one. Yeah. Oh, I think those are awesome, though. That makes me feel a little insulted.
My friend just went, he saw the Final Fantasy one here or somewhere else, and they didn't have... there's one song, was it Answer? There's this woman that's so in St. Louis this past weekend, the concert was there and she was there, and he was like, I don't know, he's like, I feel weird because I just saw the show, like, go in and seen it again, but I didn't get to see her sing this. I was like, if you have the means, and he has friends in St. Louis, I was like, go crash on their couch, go see the show, because you know you're gonna be mad that you didn't go see it. But yeah, So Monster Hunter, like, is it name dropped as Monster Hunter, or is it just like alluded to that it's something in that vein?
Well, I mean, I didn't personally recognize it. I've never played Monster Hunter. I just thought it was a fun anime thing happening because everyone in the audience was dressed up in various cosplay. and so I thought it was just an anime concert. But yeah, it was. She crashed and burned pretty hard.
It's hysterical. I love that that's how like they distinguish your fall from grace is you go from one symphony away from being world renowned to orchestra, you know, conducting an orchestra for an anime concert in the Philippines.
It feels so tone deaf though, because like my thing is I'm like, I know people who are in like or big orchestras, and like major orchestras will do recordings for video game work and stuff like that.
Sure.
So, yeah. Like, I don't know. I get what they're saying though. Like she went from being like a major name to doing orchestras in like a smaller setting. It just so feels
yeah, because
I feel it, like in, I'm getting a backhand embarrassment or something. Secondhand embarrassment.
In the world of this movie, she's an EGOT winner. Yeah. So it'd be like John Williams coming and just conducting the Kingdom Hearts concert in front of the Orlando Philharmonic.
I would love that. I would absolutely love it.
Not that it wouldn't be amazing. I just feel that's a little below his station.
And, I don't. It's like you. entertaining nerds like me are below his station. Like, then she deserves it. She deserves everything that. She's kidding.
Maybe it's less about conducting a symphony to an anime and more that it's the Philippines. I don't know. Like any which way you go, you could be offending some part of culture. I don't right? know.
Well, whoever, I don't know. Maybe, whoever feels like being
maybe offended Jiggly Caliente was there in the audience judging her with the little rhinestone on the tip of her nose. I don't know.
Of course.
Or Mama Pal was there to hit her with the nits and the picks and kick her in the mud. I don't know. Whatever that whole long thing was that she would say before the lip sync.
Oh, man.
Somebody out there, I'm sure, has it memorized. BJ, did you see Tar? I know I haven't.
I have not.
Okay.
So it's a good watch. It's now for streaming on Peacock.
Peacock, cock, cock.
You're peacock, cock.
My contribution is Katy just Perry. Random non sequiturs and sounds.
Settle down there, Katy Perry. Get back to American Idol.
Will do. In the Philippines. Gotta go by. So what would you give this movie on the flame rating scale?
I would give it a 4. 4 flames. I feel like at this point with the amount of awards she has won, she's probably the lock for the Oscar, which makes me sad because I really want Michelle Yeoh to win it.
Yeah.
But I won't be as upset now that I have seen the movie.
Well, you never know. I mean, if anything, 2020's Oscars showed us that these things can happen. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's possible. The Oscars are later this year.
Yeah,
I feel, because I was like, wait a minute, February of 2020, I was in Atlanta with Jay, and it was, I feel like, just before this time of the month, and we were at Woof's when Parasite like shocked the Oscars and won Best Picture and all of that. So like, I just had one of those memory flashbacks, and it's like, wait a minute, we're almost at the end of February and the Oscars haven't happened. When are they coming up this week?
March 12th.
Yeah, they're in March. Wow. This year. Yeah.
Damn. They said we're gonna edge you until March. All right. Well, that is Tar. Stream it on Peacock and let us know what you think about it. So for my topic,
You
it's
found
a smorgasbord. No, it's a smorgasbord of I'm gonna kind of go through a couple of quick things that I have watched, caught up on, have had the chance to watch. I don't know, like the last couple of weeks have been a little weird. I haven't really had one thing to focus on, but I have been keeping up with a couple of things, so I don't really have one big in-depth topic to talk about, but I will touch on a couple of things, mostly reality competitions, because that's a huge part of what I watch most of the time. That and General Hospital. And Eric said that I can't do a deep dive into the 60-year history of television's longest-running soap opera. So, unfortunately, that's not what I'm going to do today.
Just know a couple people got married in the 80s and it was a big thing. That's all you need to know about General Hospital.
I mean, yes. And one of those two is still on the show today. It is now 3 weeks later. And that was that's always my go-to joke whenever it comes to it. When it's like, whenever I would talk to somebody and they were like, oh my God, I used to watch all my children back in the day also. And I'd be like, all right, well, let me catch you up. It's 3 weeks later. They've finally gotten out of the room. No. So, but so I'm not a big chef. I'm not a chefy person. I'm not an adventurous eater. For those of you who know me know that I am not by any means or by any stretch of the imagination. But I do love me some cooking shows. And I do love me some cooking competition shows. I have now been granted access to Peacock. So I was able to catch up on the last season of Top Chef, which was overall a pretty good season. I know, Eric, you are a Top Chef watcher as well. My friend in front of the pod, Jamie, pulled a me and was binging Top Chef from the beginning all the way through. Less seasons of that than pretty much any of the other shows that I've gone down a rabbit hole, a deep depressive rabbit hole, and watched. But it's been fun reminiscing on those old seasons because I haven't seen them in so long. You can tell that this past season was starting to feel a little bit more like the before times. Still not. They still haven't broken back into like, hey, we're just going to go full out back to the way it was. But they're incorporating more locations. They're incorporating more people. They had their family come like towards the end of the season. Overall, for those of you who haven't watched it, who maybe are waiting for it to come to Hulu, I'm not going to spoil anything about who won. I was okay with the winner. I kind of figured that person was going to be the winner of the season. There was one other finalist that I wanted a little bit more. But overall, I think it was a fairly strong season of Top Chef. On the flip side of that, not necessarily the flip side, because I actually did like the winner of the season. Hell's Kitchen, season 21. Do either of you watch Hell's Kitchen or have watched Hell's Kitchen in the past?
I've seen one or two episodes.
I only watched the first season and it rubbed me the wrong way in that it with the way Top Chef elevates food so much.
The food is not the star of Hell's Kitchen at all.
No, not at all. But I felt like at the time the prize that they gave out on the first couple seasons of Hell's Kitchen, I don't know, they still give them a restaurant at the end?
Yes-ish. I mean, yes. It's roughly the same thing. Like they get a cash prize and they're executive chef at one of Gordon Ramsay's restaurants for, I think, a year.
Okay. Yeah, because the first couple of seasons, they basically said, we're going to let you run a restaurant, like basically design and run a restaurant. And over on Top Chef, they just get $100,000, which isn't, I say just $100,000. But I don't think you can open a restaurant with just that amount of prize money.
Yeah, so, not one that's like, I mean, you can, but like maybe like a cafe sort of restaurant, not like a full like restaurant that you and I would just go to on like a Friday night or something. Yeah.
So I just felt like the talent was so much higher on Top Chef, but the prize was so much better on Hell's Kitchen. And I was like, you're inviting all of these culinary children. And it seems like it's basically one set menu in the restaurant the entire season, or at least was at that point in time. I don't know.
So this is, to your point on that, it's essentially Gordon Ramsay's restaurant that they're working at. Like, that's the conceit of it. So when they're doing dinner services, they're cooking his menu. So they'll have, and as the seasons have gone on, obviously it's changed, because then they'll do steak night at Hell's Kitchen. They'll do Italian night at Hell's Kitchen. So there are all of these different things, but they're not necessarily, they're not essentially making their own dishes and then having to prepare them. Hell's Kitchen is more of a,
you could study and learn how to make those 8 dishes that they have on every year and do okay on Hell's Kitchen.
Yes and no, because I don't, it's been a long time since I watched the first season of Hell's Kitchen. I think this goes back to the early seasons as well. At the beginning, you have to do your signature dish. Like, you have to make dishes in order, like, as part of, the auditioning process.
Yeah, like their mini challenges are more, okay, make whatever, and then...
Exactly. Those are more like the quick fire challenges on Top Chef. Those are more of that, that dish-centric piece of it, where, because the prize on Hell's Kitchen is a spot as an executive chef, as the person who is running this restaurant, and now it's one of Gordon Ramsay's. So, like, for the last, I don't know how many seasons, but they're not building a restaurant around this person. They're going to this restaurant, and they are going to take this coveted, highly prestigious in the chefing world position of executive chef at this restaurant, and now you are that person. So the conceit of Hell's Kitchen is more of an on-the-job interview type of deal, a continual week after week, you know, type of, okay, you need to be able to work in a kitchen, because it eventually gets down to that point when you're in that final four mode. They actually take turns running the pass, which is like that final step of running the kitchen. So it's weird, because it is definitely two different types of things, where Top Chef is, hey, you have these accolades, you have done this, you have built yourself up to this. And it's not necessarily saying that these are all executive chefs. They're not all James Beard Award nominees. They do have some of those people, but they also have people that have made names for themselves being personal chefs or chef to the stars, stuff like that. But it is very much focused on, their challenges are focused on what dishes can they create. Here's your challenge. Here's your ingredients. Here are the limitations we put on you. Make something amazing and present it to us, and we're going to judge you on that. Where Hell's Kitchen is definitely, how do you work inside of a restaurant kitchen? And how do you handle the pressure of all of that? And how many times can Gordon Ramsay put a slice of bread on each of your ears and ask you what you are?
And then you have to tell him you're an idiot sandwich.
Exactly. Exactly. I'm an idiot sandwich chef. Yeah. So, yeah. The funny thing is, after 20 seasons, they finally did something that they had not done before. Because usually it's men versus women. So they have their 20 contestants, I think it usually is. 10 men, 10 women. I know, very, very gender binary, very no allowing for any fluctuation in the middle. But what they did this time around is they did essentially young versus old.
Oh, boy.
And they called it Battle of the Ages. And they had chefs in their 20s So you've got your new up-and-coming stars. These are the people that are really just, they're in the early years of their career versus chefs in their 40s. So these are chefs that have been around for a while. You've got executive chefs. These are people that have been cooking for a long time, for the most part. I think there was one woman who had a career change and she'd only been cooking or been a chef for like 3 or 4 years, something relatively new. But mature, wiser. People at home can't see what I'm doing, but I am doing air quotes around these words. Because can I tell you, the theme was revoked after about 3 episodes. Because the older chefs could not keep their shit together and were decimated in the first couple of eliminations. And it got to the point where they finally just said, fuck it. And they had to move people around. And then I think they just went, then they just went back to men versus women, and it was just a mixed bag. And I was like, y'all really shot yourselves in the fucking foot with this theme, because the theme was on the title card. It's on the damn, you know, all the stuff for the show, for the season. And you've eliminated it. To throw it back to a Survivor reference, this was when they did, was it Cook Islands? Where it was young men, young women, older men, older women, and that lasted for 1 episode. And on episode 2, they were like, we're going to now go to 2 tribes and mix it up. Because it was really obvious really quickly that this was a bad idea. It was definitely a season. It was definitely one that was very much... They had to have been kicking themselves that they decided to do this, this theme. But it was fun. It was at times entertaining. And overall, I think that the correct person won. And it wasn't a bad season overall. And then one final cooking show that I will mention that I have enjoyed. I did not realize was coming back for a second season. Next Level Chef. Have either of you seen any ads or seen this on the platforms? It's on Hulu. It's another Fox cooking show.
I think I may have seen like 4 seconds of an ad before I click skip ads on YouTube.
Yeah, 100% the same.
Okay, cool. So Next Level Chef, Gordon Ramsay again. So Gordon Ramsay in Hell's Kitchen is one Gordon Ramsay. Gordon Ramsay on everything else. Okay, Gordon Ramsay on Hell's Kitchen and Kitchen Nightmares is one Gordon Ramsay. Gordon Ramsay on everything else is completely different. MasterChef, for the most part, a lovely, enjoyable fellow. Next Level Chef.
MasterChef Kids or MasterChef Junior.
Oh, he's yeah. He's
the
he
most
loves...
lovable dad ever.
Yeah.
I'm not a huge fan of Kids. I can't watch that show. But I've heard. That is what I've heard. I know Pop Culture Happy Hour used to, like, Linda used to just really rant and rave about how amazing, or maybe it was Steven, how amazing he was with the kids on MasterChef Junior. But this is a cooking competition game show stuff, kind of, with Gordon Ramsay, Richard Blaze, and Aisha Harrington. I'm not looking it up right now, but Chef Aisha. So what they do is they split these chefs, and it is a mixture of professional chefs, of home cooks, of like TikTok and Instagram, like social media chefs. So a variety of, like, I don't want to say novice to professional, but kind of all these different levels and facets of cooking. And they divide them up. They pick their teams. And there's this giant 3-story building contraption that's inside of this shooting facility.
Oh, God.
Top floor is all state-of-the-art. Gorgeous, the best of the best, like the finest restaurant that you are spending way too much money at, but all of the most amazing things. Middle level is your really good restaurant. So, you know, like, just really good stuff. Nothing like, you're not spending a fortune. You don't have to sell a kidney to eat there, but you're getting a really good meal. The bottom kitchen is like the Haunted Mansion. It is run down. It is beat up. It is not where you want to be. So there is an elevator type of thing, a platform that descends and ascends through the corner. And there's ingredients on it. They have the challenge. It starts to descend. The top level gets first pick at all of the ingredients. So they get all the best stuff, then to the middle, then to the bottom floor. Then based off of who has the best dish of that episode, that team can either rise up and level up to the top level, or they may just stay there. The bottom two dishes, depending on, you know, one from each of the other two teams, they compete, and there's a blind judging on the dishes, and then one is eliminated. The team that wins the lip sync for your life style cook-off, they go to the middle level, and then the team that loses, their team goes to the bottom level and is down a person. It's a very weird and interesting kind of take, but having Gordon Ramsay with other judges is a whole different world. It's kind of that MasterChef feel, where you've got these other dynamics and these other voices that play off each other really well. Overall, I think it's a really fun show, and it shows you like how much you take for granted if you're cooking, when you go from having top of the line to a knife that is barely able to cut through anything, you know. So seeing the disparity between the levels is kind of an interesting take on a cooking competition. And the fact that they have these tools, but they still are able to put together dishes that look really good and taste really good, shows the level of talent that these chefs have, no matter what they're doing as far as cooking, whether it's on social media or they are, you know, a Michelin star restaurant chef. So that's another Fox show. It's on Hulu. That's where I watch it. I don't watch a lot of live television, but there's a couple of food related reality shows for you. And if you are so inclined, check them out. And let me know if you're watching. I would love to chat about them. So that is what I'm going to be chatting about. So before we get to our final things, let's do our last break. Thank you all so much for listening to Flame On. We hope that you're enjoying this episode and all of the other content that we put out for you. Don't forget to check out our website at flameonshow.com and check out our Patreon at patreon.com/flameonshow. All right, mine friends. Let's do our one-offs.
Mine friends.
Eric, why don't you go ahead and give us your one-up first?
So I know, I think last episode, my one-up was the first three episodes of season two of Vox Machina. But my one-up this month is the rest of season two of Vox Machina. Because it's that damn good, and it all comes out at the same time, and yeah. So total of 12 episodes, and 4, 5, and 6 were really good again. Gosh, just did you watch the whole season, BJ?
I am on like the last two episodes. I was without my car for a really long time when I first moved up. And that drama. And my roommate is actually watching it with her husband, and he is trying to sell their house down in Florida. So every time I go to watch it, I try to watch it when she's gaming with her husband, so I don't spoil it. Same as with The Last of Us. So I'm on like the last episode.
Gotcha. Probably one of my favorite parts of the season was in episode 6. When they meet the second Sphinx.
Yep.
And Scanlan sings his song, and it's just so good.
It's so cute. I love that. I love it when Scanlan gets moments like that. It's so cute.
Just overall, there was so much character growth in all the characters this season. And I can't wait to for season three, which I know has been confirmed that they're doing a season three. Don't know when it'll happen because the first two seasons came out pretty close together. So I don't know when they'll get around to the third one. Even though they did announce that they are making another series, their second campaign, The Mighty Nein, is going to be another animated show.
Oh, nice.
I guess to come out, they'll probably start alternating seasons, I would assume, as they get through it.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad that you finished up after I guilted you into making it your one-up last month. All right, BJ, what is your one-up?
My one-up is Harley Quinn's problematic Valentine's Day special. So they just wrapped season three of Harley Quinn about a month or two ago, and they announced they were doing a surprise Valentine's Day special. And season three of the Harley Quinn series actually begins with Harley and Ivy officially dating as a couple. Harley, you know, overdoing it as in Harley fashion, and Ivy trying to kind of find her place in the whole villain hierarchy, because as she states many times in the show, she is not a supervillain. She is a eco-terrorist. Two different things. So season three kind of ends with Bruce Wayne going to jail for tax evasion. And Harley becoming the newest member of the Bat family and actually embracing a more heroic role. And Batgirl pretty much being put in charge of her, Nightwing and Damian Wayne, Robin. So it's really cute, but we kind of come off the heels on that onto Valentine's Day, where they do all these weird couples interviews. And there's like a couples interview with Arthur, Aquaman, and his wife, Mira. That's really funny, where she's just like, yeah, I was supposed to kill him, but, you know, I just fell in love with those beautiful eyes. She's like, now the rest of surface dwellers will eventually murder all of you. He's like, she's kidding. She's like, I am not. You've got Bane, who accidentally gets sucked into doing kink play with this one dominatrix, so they're just making fun of this one guy, and he's just coming up with all the insults that people insult him about. And Etrigan runs a magic shop where people are constantly buying sex spells. So Bane buys a sex spell, Harley buys a sex spell and uses it on Ivy, because she's obsessed with making sure Ivy has the best Valentine's Day ever. And Ivy's orgasm causes everybody in the entire city to go like sex crazy. So, and there's a wonderful line where she's just like, Harley, I can't deal with you doing these things. And she's like, oh, you can't get upset with me for getting you off too good. That is not a thing. And she's like, damn it, you're right. So I think it's about 40 minutes long. It's on HBO Max. It is absolutely hilarious. Honestly, the entire Harley Quinn series is hilarious from start to finish. If you haven't watched it, it's up on HBO Max. Please give it a watch. It is really good.
Nice. All right. So two quick ones for me. First, Flowers, Miley Cyrus. When we were talking about things that we were looking forward to in 2023, I thought the album was coming out in January. It was just the first single. It is fun. It is catchy. It's an earworm. And I enjoy it. If you haven't listened to Flowers, go do yourself a favor. And it has now become her longest running number one single. So props to you, Miley. And just don't and hit yourself in the head with a sledgehammer too much. Okay. And then the other thing.
Add pepper.
come on, Cuban. All right, listen, paprika.
Onion salt. Get it together.
dying. Another quick one. A Million Little Things has come back for its fifth and final season. Another thing I was looking forward to. I told Eric when I saw him this past weekend, my thought when I watched, I'm a little behind on it, but my thought when I went to hit play on episode one of season five was, if I don't cry at some point during this, it's going to have lost its charm and its magic. And can I tell you, not 5 minutes into it, before the title card even hit, I was sobbing unfucking controllably. They are coming out swinging in this final season. So impactful, so powerful. For people my age, whether no matter where you fall in the spectrum, sexuality, gender, any of that, if you are in your late 30s, early 40s, please watch this show. Go and watch this show. It hits on so many topics and so many different things, and is, in my opinion, one of the queerest shows that ABC has in its regular, like, scripted television programs. Amazing. I love it. Season five has started, and I'm so excited. Final thing, How I Met Your Father season two is back. Hilary Duff, still a national fucking treasure. They are leaning into the world a little bit more. Season one felt like it was almost trying to figure out a way to tell a story in a season just in case it didn't get past season one. And it kind of felt a little light in certain areas. Now they've got season two, it feels like they are digging in a little bit more. We have in the first episode, a cameo from Neil Patrick Harris. So Barney will be involved in some storyline that involved Sophie talking to her mom on the phone saying, I think I'm dating my dad. And I was like, oh my God, please don't tell me that they are going to go the route of Barney did not raise his daughter and she's dating Barney. I was like, please don't let that be the case. And then she ends up rear ending him in this, like, right after she says that. And it's a whole, I was like, okay, thank God they did not do that. Anyway,
she pegged him.
She did peg him. Yes.
With a car.
But overall, it's starting off really, really well. I should have an episode that I have to watch, that's waiting for me on Hulu that I'll watch tonight, but it seems to really kind of be enjoying itself a little bit more in this season. So very happy that it's back for a season two. And, if you're watching, let me know, cause I would love to know that more people are out there enjoying the show. And if you're watching A Million Little Things, please tell me. Because I want more people to talk about it, and I want people to reach out and let us know that our recommendations are reaching you and you're hearing us. So anyway, that will wrap it up for us for this month. A bit shorter of an episode, but we're making it succinct and giving you all the good tea and getting out quickly. So from all of us, thank you. Make sure that you check us out, flameonshow.com, patreon.com/flameonshow. And we will see you next time. Bye, bitches.
Bye.
Today's tale begins the night the internet went down at the Smith family.
Son?
The dad watched on powerless as his son aged before his eyes.
The game has been loading forever.
Save yourself from broadband nightmares. Get BT's unbreakable hybrid broadband backed up by EE, the UK's best network. Search BT Hybrid Broadband. 88% UK availability. 4G connection takes up to 175 seconds. Best for mobile network performance. Verify at ee.co.uk/claims.